Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gunnar Tindberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm. I'm happy to have as my guest Ben Fountain. I first met Ben Fountain when his novel, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, appeared, a book that won the Los Angeles Times Book Prize for Fiction and the National Book Critics Circle Award, among quite a few others. I had known his collection of stories, Brief Encounters with Che Guevara, and so now that he's written a work of nonfiction, I was so engrossed in it. I liked its rhetorical strategies so much that I couldn't wait, say, to get out of the shower and get back to the book. It's a book about one of the most, shall we say, arresting and fascinating and dangerous periods. What period?
Michael, it is about the election of 2016 and how we got there and why things are the way they are.
And you speak as a citizen of Texas, yes?
I do. I grew up in North Carolina, and I've lived in Texas for 35 years. So, yes, I'm a Texan.
And the book is called Beautiful Country Burn Again. And it suggests that one of the things that makes us beautiful is that we have burned before. The title comes from a poem by the California poet Robinson Jeffers, Apology for Bad Dreams. I'm just going to read the relevant lines. Beautiful country, burn again. Point Pinos down to Sir Rivers. Burn as before with bitter wonders, land and ocean and the Carmel water. Ben Fountain takes this epigraph as the occasion for saying, the country has burned before. It burns, he suggests, every 80 years or so. When we formed the nation, when we went to war about slavery, when we participated in the brilliant insight that led to the New Deal, the beautiful country burned again because we had to burn ourselves clean. We had to burn ourselves fresh. Our faults could not stand against the existential crisis that we were facing. And now Ben Fountain, my guest, suggests that the beautiful country must burn again, that we're facing a race and class, every kind of hatred is being subsidized. We're not good neighbors anymore. We don't show respect for one another's problems. Now tell me, Ben, when we formed the country, we had a collection of geniuses, the so-called founding fathers. There are those who don't want to agree that these patriarchs were geniuses, and yet they did something for the first time that created a democratic constitution. We had the genius of Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War, although one of my teachers, Dwight MacDonald, disagreed that Lincoln was a genius. Now, Is there a genius on the horizon who can help this beautiful country to burn again? Do you see a light on the horizon?
Certainly, in 1860, people would not have expected Abraham Lincoln to be the revolutionary leader that he was. And probably in 1932, given Franklin Roosevelt's background as you know, one of the, you know, waspiest of the wasps, came from money, educated at Harvard, certainly few people would have expected him to be the prime mover in a structural revolution in this country that would benefit working people above everyone else. You know, do I see someone on the horizon right now? I thought Barack Obama might have been that person. And as much as I love him, I felt like he was elected as a transformational president, but governed as a transactional president.
What does that mean?
Well, I felt like in 2008, especially given the existential crisis of the economic meltdown, that that was going to be the moment of reinvention. And we needed basic structural change in this country, change in the power structure of the country, how power and wealth are allocated in this country. He, at the end of his 8 years in office, the power equation in this country had not changed fundamentally.
Now, you are a novelist, but you were a lawyer, and you bring to this book, Beautiful Country, Burn Again, published by Echo Press, the qualities of a novelist, a wild, misanthropic novelist, a Jonathan Swift, really, and the qualities of someone who is studying economy and law and the struggles of our very rich against our underclass, or let me put that vice versa, our struggles of the underclass against the very rich, and the fact that they are struggling against one another. It's a very shockingly funny and enjoyable book. At one point, Hillary Clinton is called our enemy, and in a book full of parentheses, it says, our enemy? No, our opponent, our rival.
Right.
Our enemy.
You are referencing remarks by a Christian pastor at the Republican convention, and before he gives the benediction for that day's session, he reminds Republicans that Republicans have to stick together because Democrats are the enemy.
And we have to begin to see that this enemy thinking is what's destroying us as a country. And Beautiful Country, Burn Again is asking for the cleansing fire that will put us all in the same quandary rather than as sets of enemies. And it's not just one side that's lying. This book is kind of amazing because it's an, what would you call it? An equal class vilifier.
Equal opportunity vexation is what I'm going after.
Yeah. And you do it really well. I think only a novelist could have written this book, and only a lawyer could have thought it through. Hmm. Now, you have a formula in this book for what's happened to American class that has to do with the rich and the underclass.
Well, Michael, I'm a desperate writer. And I am always hanging on by my fingertips, trying to figure out whatever it is that is in my head at that moment. And I was trying to understand white identity politics and how so many white Americans could vote against their obvious economic interest in favor of white identity politics. And it began to dawn on me that perhaps identity politics is at bottom economics. And I came up with this formula: profit proportionate to freedom, plunder correlative to subjugation.
So in other words, the people who are making money are the ones with the greatest freedom. The people who are having money taken away from them by the rich are the ones who are being subjugated.
Yes, exactly. You know, as I was working out that formulation and mentally testing it against what I knew from books and my own experience, I felt like it resounded pretty well, you know, down through history as I understand it. And the most obvious example of that in American life is the bondage of men and women of color. Slave owners had virtually unlimited freedom with respect to the people they held in slavery. That freedom included power over life and death, rape, torture, kidnapping. You could call that a monopoly on freedom, if you will. And the practical effect of that was that the people held in bondage, they did not get the fruits of their labor. All their blood, sweat, and tears went to the profit of the person who held them in bondage.
I'm talking to Ben Fountain, the author of Beautiful Country, Burn Again. You're hearing about this on Bookworm because he's also the novelist who wrote Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. And we have a long-standing tradition on Bookworm when a novelist goes into the field of autobiography or journalism or economic analysis. We want to follow him because the show has been about culture and where it takes people who are trying to create culture. Now, part of Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk was a desire to understand what it was like to put a soldier in a football field where he's being celebrated and simultaneously ignored. He has absolutely nothing. And the only thing he's really given out of the whole long halftime walk is a caress from a cheerleader. And the momentary hallucination that everything that goes on between them is sincere and eloquent and moving.
Billy Lynn, I realized as I got into it, what I was exploring, what I was interested in exploring, is the profound gap between reality and fantasy in American life and the danger that poses for us. And for certain people, it is a literally existential danger. For someone like Billy Lynn, a soldier in an American war, if we as a country aren't grappling with our reality, you know, rock bottom, gut bucket reality, then more young men and women like Billy Lynn will be sent to wars and will die. It is literal life and death. But I think that gap between fantasy and reality does all kinds of damage to bodies and souls throughout our culture. And it was something I couldn't help but carry forward into writing Beautiful Country, Burn Again. You know, there was a man named Roger Ailes. He was
the inventor. He was
made his reputation
inventing Nixon.
Bringing Nixon back from the dead. Roger Ailes understood a new truth in American life. He understood the power that television could and would wield in our national life, and he understood the dynamics of the TV and the viewer, and the way to keep people glued to the tube and not changing the channel is to give them drama, emotion, and conflict. Drama, emotion, conflict, that equals dollars.
That equals dollars.
That equals dollars, and I think—
And dollars equals power.
Absolutely, and I think you see so far the culmination of that dynamic, and Roger Ailes was a dark genius. He saw this truth, he applied his talents to it, and so far the culmination of that is Trump. What we get every day from this White House is drama, emotion, conflict. And Trump is a maestro at creating that and selling it.
Now, you point out that we're not living in a time when things are all one thing or all another. And so if it had been the other way around, if Hillary had won, we'd have been watching another comedy. We have a funny time when, because of the failure of our community language, we're stuck with a misuse of language in the service of ideology instead of language in the service of accuracy and ideals.
Absolutely. Language is in the service not of trying to apprehend reality, to comprehend, you know, our life, but for obfuscation and distraction and ultimately for falsehood.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Ben Fountain about his book, Beautiful Country, Burn Again, Democracy, Rebellion, and Revolution. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Ben Fountain about his book, Beautiful Country, Burn Again, a fusion of history with the present, painting a portrait of our country in the midst of an existential crisis. Now, one of our great Californian novelists today, Steve Erickson, has written a small Facebook essay that's very moving to me. I'm going to read a bit of it, and we can talk about the issue it raises. Every time a politician or Beltway commentator laments the disruption of norms by this president, or complains that something is no longer normal, as they've done with increasing frequency over recent days, it validates Trump in the mind of the Trump voter. The Trump voter thinks to himself, damn straight, I didn't vote for normal. I voted for disruption. What has normal gotten me? What about my normal? And he isn't entirely wrong. Only a satisfied establishment is so heavily vested in what's normal. Rather than bloodless arguments about what's normal, it's neither too soon nor too late to argue about what's right and good. We should argue not whether the tacit approval of murdering journalists is normal, but whether it's right or good. We should argue not whether white supremacy is normal, but whether it's right or good. We should argue whether mockery of the physically disabled in a campaign speech is right or good, or whether abducting kids from terrorized families seeking asylum is right or good. We should argue whether institutional indifference to sexually assaulted women for the sake of a Supreme Court of any ideology is right or good. We should argue whether the systematic suppression of the Native American vote in North Dakota or the African American vote in Georgia is right or good. Okay. Right or good, Ben?
Right or good, normal, abnormal. I think Steve Erickson makes an excellent point in there. What has politics, quote, normal American politics, given working men and women in this country the last 35 years, say, from the time of Ronald Reagan's election? I think the evidence shows that working men and women have most definitely gotten the shaft in American life the last 35 years. The economic anxieties and grievances of the big middle of the American nation are absolutely legitimate. People feel like fundamental fairness has been lost. Fundamental fairness, which comes down to questions of right and wrong. In our national life, going back to the founding documents, and the particular founding document, the Declaration of Independence, and those crucial words that we can hope lie at the core of the American soul, all men are created equal. All are entitled, all have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That is the American notion of justice, equal citizenship, stature, justice, and opportunity for the common man and woman. All right, I'm going to read a short section from a small event that Ted Cruz held in Iowa toward the end of January. And it was in a middle school cafeteria, about 100 of us in the cafeteria. And Steve King, the xenophobic congressman from Northwest Iowa, gave the introductory remarks. So Cruz steps up to speak. The candidate begins with lavish props to Steve King. Steve King every day stands up and fights for the Constitution. He fights for freedom, Cruz intones in his righteous warble. Every day, Steve King crawls over broken glass with a knife between his teeth, fighting for the men and women of Iowa. This is a fair example of the Cruz rhetorical style, which tends toward the graphic, the violent, the overstimulated, a kind of Pee-wee's playhouse of gaudy apocalypticism, the faithful ever at war with the armies of darkness. In Cruz's world, we are always standing at the edge of the abyss. We are charged with pulling this nation back from the cliff, and the stakes have never been higher, and we are perpetually running out of time. We're here this morning for something a lot more important than politics, he informs us in urgent, breathy tones of preacherly sanctimony, his voice dropping as it nears the end of every thought, digging for the tremble, the hushed vibrato of ultimate virtue. You'd think he gargles twice a day with a cocktail of high fructose corn syrup and holy roller snake oil. His tone and cadence take after the saccharine blather of the great Christian pitchmen of radio and TV, the hucksters who mastered the catch in the throat, their tremulous quaver and gulp, because as every pro knows, that's where the money is.
Ben Fountain, reading from Beautiful Country, Burn Again, and even a conservative reviewer praised him for the high style of his descriptions, and he really does do it here, and he's an equal opportunity vilifier. He doesn't choose one party or another. This is a time when we're all stepping forward and using the least appropriate language, the least well-considered metaphors. This has become our national life. It's why the epigraph for this book comes not from a poem that was written 2 months ago, but from one that was written decades ago by Robinson Jeffers. It's why we're not seeing yet the political poetry that one would expect to be seeing if our poetry were capable of doing what Allen Ginsberg had been doing in the 60s. We're not generating a culture. We're generating a huge language warp in which people speak without any connection to what they mean.
William Carlos Williams, he has some lines in a poem, and I go back to those over and over again. It is difficult to get the news from poems, yet men die miserably every day
for lack of what is found there. I love it too.
And what he's talking about is comprehending, apprehending our experience, human life, trying to make sense of what we're doing in our lives. And William Carlos Williams, he was a family doctor. He delivered how many thousands of babies? He saw death in 100 forms. And so here's a physician making the argument that people literally die for lack of what is found in poems. But when you think about what poetic language is, it is language that's getting down into the real stuff of life, trying to make sense of human experience, of the reality around us and in us. You start to realize that without genuine poems, people really are dying miserable deaths. Talk about all of the American soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan who have died miserable deaths because we went to war based on a lie. All the millions of civilians in the Middle East who have died in these wars, and they died miserable deaths because of a lie, because of language that's abused and misused.
I've been talking with Ben Fountain. He's the author of Beautiful Country, Burn Again. Its subtitle is Democracy, Rebellion, and Revolution. It's published by Echo. Very well worth reading. Thank you for joining me.
Michael, there's no place I'd rather be than right here.
You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And you can listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer and assistant, Sean Sullivan. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Eileen Miles is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.